Coming up this week on the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast, Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios goes trick-or-treating. Once again, we learn that Disneyland giveth and Disneyland taketh away from its annual passholder programs, and Red, see what I did there, year or not, Pirates of the Caribbean reopens at Disneyland. Plus, it's time for another dining review, and this time we're headed to the Uva Bar at Downtown Disney. From an undisclosed location near the Pacific Ocean, this is the Vacationland Podcast. This is the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast for the week of June 11, 2018. Visit our travel partner, Magical Vacation Planner by Caris, for help planning your next vacation getaway to any of the following: Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, Adventures by Disney and Aulani, Universal Studios Orlando, and Royal Caribbean, Princess, Carnival Cruises, and more. Get your free consultation by visiting Magical Vacation Planner by Caris on Facebook or by visiting magicalvacationplanner.com/staff/CarisMilano. Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast, a discussion of the latest news, reviews, and history from Universal Studios Hollywood, Knott's Berry Farm, and the Disneyland Resort. All brought to you by our team of theme park fans and experts. My name is Chris Ramirez. I am the host and executive producer of the Vacationland Podcast, and this week I am joined by YouTube sensation and Knott's Berry Farm reporter, Brandis Strautman. Good morning, Brandis.
Good morning.
Alternate John and contributor, John Strautman. Hi, John.
Hey, Chris.
And once again, from last week, we had so much fun with her, You Know Her, You Love Her, from our vlog series. Welcome, Karen Fan.
Good morning.
Hello. So, hi, everyone. Welcome back. I'd like to, first of all, welcome John and Brandis back. They got a very deserved show off. Did you guys do anything fun with their weekend 2 weeks ago when you guys weren't here?
Why weren't we here? What happened?
I feel like on the spot. I don't know. I don't know.
That's how good it was. Yeah, we had the kids.
Yeah, that's how good it was.
Yeah. We recorded later in the day than we normally do.
Oh, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, we had the kids, so we were just having dinner at home.
We might have went swimming.
Oh, is that the day we went swimming?
Well, we went swimming. You did not go swimming.
I just had a Bloody Mary by the pool.
You know she read by the pool.
I'd say I would hang out with Brandis more. I would be like, oh, pool or Bloody Mary with a book. I think I would go with Brandis's choice.
The Bloody Mary makes it kind of unfair to make the choice. But
you can read by the pool with your Bloody Mary in your hand.
Yeah.
You could have swam in the pool with a Bloody Mary in your hand. I'm just saying.
We live in a large complex, so you can't really take your drink in the pool. Kids ruin it. There's too many parents not. They use the pool as a babysitter.
You could have hopped out of the pool, had some Bloody Mary, hop back in. I feel like there are ways around this if you'd really wanted to.
Okay, so this is our main entrance segment, which is our welcome back segment. We've been doing some traveling to the parks. Notably, I wanted to talk about with you guys the last time, but you guys weren't here. John, you guys recently went to Knott's again and rode Hang Time.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That is correct.
Tell us what you thought.
Well, it was, my first thought of it was that it wasn't that intense because you're hanging up there and like, but then it drops you, but it goes inward and out like that. I don't know how to describe it, but the drop doesn't seem that crazy. But then as I thought about it, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, because they made it, from the descriptions that we read and from everything that we saw and everybody's reaction online, it really seemed like they were making it seem like a really intense ride. Like there was going to be some, I know Brandy refused to ride it originally.
She won't ride anything fun. That's just the way it is.
Well, and as for that, they really pumped up Soul Spin too, and look at how badly that's going.
Right.
Okay, so it was 20,000 times better than Soul Spin. I'll put that on the map.
I don't think I've ever been on Soul Spin.
They did speed it up recently. I think now that it's getting stuck a lot less, but it's still kind of getting stuck very frequently.
So the last time I was on anything in that corner of Knott's Berry Farm was when they had that one, the swing, the one that take you up.
Oh, I love that one.
The one that, I mean.
Yeah, and it's like you swing and then you spin. And
Windjammer was it? Or
no, not Windjammer. Windjammer was
the one that's still there, right?
Was the roller coaster, yeah. No, it's gone.
I never went on that one. It got stuck.
That one kept getting stuck as well, and the firefighters' ladders didn't go that high to rescue people like it did for when that other one got stuck.
The Sky Cabin.
Yeah, Sky Cabin.
Yeah. That was really tall, and they couldn't get, so they had to like hand crank it, right?
It was horrible. So, people peeing themselves how many feet up in the air.
Whoa, this is a family show.
Family kids friendly. Pee themselves.
Okay. Do they? No, it's true.
So my first thought was, oh, it's been so long since I've been to Knott's Berry Farm to do something besides eat at Mrs. Knott's. So maybe I should go back. And then my second thought was, or maybe I shouldn't ride that ride because it is quote unquote getting stuck less often. Huh. And then I was like in between, and then I heard, oh, but they're worried about people peeing there. So now I'm like, yeah, I work in downtown LA. I'm not really sure I need to
do you ride
more people peeing.
Do you ride roller coasters?
Yeah, I mean, I can, but it's not my choice. It's not your oh my God, I need that. I need that rush.
It's so, just this one ride they opened. How many months ago did they open that?
Hang Time or?
No. Soul Spin.
Oh, God. It was about 6 months ago.
Yeah, about 6 months ago. And it's on a cursed site. Any ride that has been on that site for some reason gets stuck. And so now Soul Spin keeps getting stuck the 6 months it's open, and it's down more times than
up. Let's be honest. Soul Spin is just, it's a permanent version of that, of the ride that you find at like the county fair, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And those ones don't get stuck.
And I'm going to be really honest. When you said Soul Spin, my first thought was, is this like a spin class?
That's
very well said. Yeah. Or like it makes me think of like a drink of some kind.
Like
I don't know what.
I'll have the Bloody Mary and the Soul Spin.
Yeah.
The S-O-L.
Oh. That's what I'm, yeah.
Yeah. And then it'd have to have tequila in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking, oh, you know, I just got out of Soul Spin, you know, and I'm on my way to pick up my kids.
Yoga pants
exactly.
And all.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So John, I need to go get a juice. Smoothie.
I'm cleansing this week.
Wheatgrass shot.
There you go. All right. So, John, you enjoyed it? I mean,
I enjoyed it. I went on it with a kid who said he went on it 10 times, and this was just like the opening day, so yeah. I trust him.
Yeah.
So and I rode in the front, and he said, riding in the front is cool, but riding in the back, you get a better experience, apparently.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be like zero G's and double inversions and make you go blind. And
there were no G's as far as I was.
That 10-year-old dropping his wisdom on you.
Dude, totally. No, it was.
It might speed up, though, because like I said, Soul Spin moves faster now than when they first opened it. So maybe Hang Time's going to go faster. They just go slow until they're sure all the kinks are worked out. And they do, by the way, Knott's Berry Farm uses its pass holders as ride testers.
That's cool and terrifying at the same time.
I'm down. I don't care. I will say this, when I was waiting in line for the ride, I was in a very bad mood, and by the time I was done with the ride, I was in a pretty good mood. So
magic, you know,
magic.
So, okay, so if, let's see, what's a great ride? So Ghost Rider is a 10, and Jaguar is a 1.
Whoa, easy there, buddy. Jaguar is awesome.
Okay, let's see, the Sierra, the little kiddie coaster.
That one's awesome, too.
I like that little kiddie coaster. I know. That was my first ever coaster.
Now, you're talking about the little one?
The little tiny one.
Yeah, that one's cool, too. Yeah, I go on that.
That is the best roller.
I actually still go on it with my son, and it's hard to get in there.
You go on it with your air quote son.
There were no air quotes. Ladies and gentlemen, there were no air quotes going on here. Okay, I literally have a six-year-old son.
All right. So
tell her.
Literally, not figuratively.
No.
All right. So what will you make a 1?
Okay. So we'll make, let's say, the squid ride. I don't know what that.
What is that thing really called? We just
voyage
called the squid ride.
The Iron Reef.
Iron Reef.
I like that ride.
Oh, I know, but it's like a 1 as far as like.
The truck ride. How about the truck ride in Camp Snoopy?
Okay. Which truck ride? Bouncing trucks or honking trucks?
Honking trucks.
Okay. We can agree that that's a 1.
Okay, so if that's a 1 and Ghost Rider is a 10, where does Soul Spin? Thank you very much, Karen.
I'll give you an answer to that. Soul Spin is about a 3, and then Hang Time is about an 8.
All right.
But
that's fair.
Excalibur?
Accelerator.
Accelerator. Is a 9, and so is Silver Bullet.
Is that ride back open?
Yes, it is. I went on it that same day.
Is it still open?
I'm starting to feel like I need to go to a lot of places besides Disneyland.
Hey, it's only $9 a month if you buy your.
Oh, there we go.
Hey, we can go do Ghost Town Alive.
Ghost Town Alive is cool.
Yes, I need to do that. I was going to see if you were going to go do that.
I would like to.
Because if we do it on a Saturday, well, we could discuss that after the
show. How come we can't get people in? Like, we're pass holders. Why can't we do that?
We'll discuss that after the show.
All right, fine.
There's a lot of discussing to be done after this show, apparently.
We can go do, we'll vlog it. We'll vlog a trip and we'll go see, we'll go do some Ghost Town Live. Okay.
Cool.
So thank you guys. So continuing on with our main entrance segment. John Lasseter, this is not theme park related, but John Lasseter, the head of Pixar, is stepping down from his position after a 6-month sabbatical. Did you guys hear about this?
Was this due to some kind of inappropriate talk or something?
Well, there's the reason for this is twofold, really. So there was a lot of allegations about John Lasseter, not necessarily inappropriate touching in the way that you're thinking of.
No, you're right. It's
but it was a lot of like touchy feely, huggy kind of stuff. The majority of this, I think, is a result of the fact that a lot of people have been complaining about kind of his managerial style and his habit of being inclusive of women and minorities in Pixar. And so that, I think, combined with the allegations of the being a little bit too friendly and a little bit too hands-on, I think kind of combined to force him to take a, and there's a lot of, there's an article in the Hollywood Reporter about, if you have a chance to go read it, about kind of the way he manages and his relationship with Bob Iger. And there is a lot of talk about his relationship with Bob Iger, and that the people at the studios and the people in the creative aspect of Disney, before they do anything that Bob Iger asks them to do, their answer is, well, I got to go talk with John about it. So I think there's a lot of conflicting personalities. And so
too many chefs in the kitchen.
Yeah. So he's been on a 6-month hiatus, you know, or a 6-month leave of absence after these allegations came up. And a lot of people thought that had to do with that Rashida Jones leaving Toy Story 4 was going to was due to some of the you know, touching allegations. And by that we mean he's never accused of doing anything on a Harvey Weinstein level. He was
maybe too huggy.
A little too huggy. The hugs lasted a little bit too long, you know.
Oh, like that one creepy guy everyone has in their congregation.
Exactly, right. Somebody on another podcast referred to him as Uncle Touchy, you know. So it's just too much, too much all at once. And so that, along with the allegations of the way that he manages and his less than inclusive ways for women and minorities at Pixar, sort of have led to this. So I just wanted to include that. It isn't really theme park related, but it was newsworthy. And it's just really sad because I think we're going to see some of the first pictures since he's been gone. The first motion pictures that are coming out without his guidance are going to be Incredibles 2 and the Wreck-It Ralph sequel. And so we're going to kind of start to see how things are, because he's been this sort of guiding vision and he's been the one that's been leading the team and providing one singular voice, and it's not going to be there anymore.
You know what's sad is, in one way, it would be hard for him to see it's better that he's gone, but in another way, it would mean he was really good at what he did because he made the people around him better, right?
Right, yeah.
And so it's like, that's a tough...
And when you lose that one creative voice, now you have a lot of people with a lot of creative voices, and so sometimes you learn... So sometimes you lose a lot of that focus and a lot of that vision.
Right.
So that was that.
Anyway.
So we talked about our trips to the park. We talked about John Lasseter. The other kind of interesting segment, and we're going to have more about this on our website, thevacationlandpodcast.com. In case you haven't heard, the world, you guys familiar with the World of Color show?
Oh, yeah.
At Disney?
Yeah.
So that
they used to have that outside, right? Like by the...
Oh, no, it's like a dancing fountain show at Disneyland. It's actually at California Adventure. It's a multi-million-dollar show. They brought it in when they did the big billion-dollar rehab. There has been a major mechanical failure at that ride, at that show, and it's actually has to do with, so there are these elevated tables that come up out of the water, and they had one of them sink. Somebody akin to, and we'll have pictures and we'll have exactly what happened on thevacationlandpodcast.com, but somebody equated it to basically, if you have a submarine and then you leave the door open and then you dive the submarine, and it costs millions of dollars in damage. And it actually, if you go on the Disneyland website right now, it's been removed from all of the calendars for the summer. And it looks like it's going to be...
Was this a mechanical failure or a user error?
No, it was a mechanical failure that happened over the Memorial Day weekend.
That robot must be so bummed right now.
That robot's so fired.
It had one job to do.
But again, go on thevacationlandpodcast.com. We're gonna post all the details about it. But yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, that's a major show. That's a big draw for a lot of people, and especially if you're coming over the summer. It doesn't look like it's going to be back before the summer is over, and that's going to disappoint a lot of people.
A lot of water too.
That's a lot of water. Yeah, it's a lot of water. It's fountains and it's like fire effects, and they really they do different. And I'm sure they were going to do something for Pixar Fest for that show, and now they raised. So one of the tables sank, and they were able to get it out of the water. But now the whole thing is it's just a mess. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you very much. That was Main Entrance, and now it's time to go.
Welcome to the Magic Kingdom of Disneyland. There are several ways to visit this happy place. If this is your first visit, you may enjoy the guided tour.
Welcome to Universal Studios Hollywood, the entertainment capital of L.A.
Park hopping is our news segment. So for our very first story, we're going to go to John. And John, tell us about the changes coming to the annual pass holder program.
Welcome to Disneyland, everyone. There are two ways in which you may visit Disneyland. They are general admission or day at Disneyland ticket books. A general admission to Disneyland is 50 cents for children under 12, 75 cents for junior and senior high school students, servicemen in uniform and members of the clergy, and $1 for adults. Children under 3 years of age are admitted free to the park.
With Disneyland is to put new limits on park visits for some annual pass holders. Discounted tickets up to 40% to annual pass holders available this summer. Disneyland announced the first of what could be large-scale changes to its popular annual passport program that will limit which parks some pass holders can visit on specific days. The changes come at a time when Anaheim Theme Park is discussing how to manage expected crowds when the new Star Wars Galaxy's Edge land opens in Disneyland in summer 2019. Disney planned to send emails this morning to pass holders explaining the new program, which will create two new admission calendars, meaning that some passes would be good at certain parks on certain days, but not necessarily both parks on the same day. Did you get an email, Chris?
I did, and actually, if you go on our Facebook page, you can see a screenshot that I posted of that email.
Now, I imagine this must be what's in the email. As our business evolves, this is the first step in reshaping our annual pass program, which will be better managed, which will better manage the guest experience and allow all Disney Resort visitors to have a great Disney visit. Disneyland spokeswoman Liz Yeager said in a prepared statement. By some estimates, there may be as many as 1 million annual pass holders, although Disney does not officially release those figures. Next June, instead of one calendar pass holder, we'll see two calendars, one for each park. They will need to check both calendars to see which park they can visit on which day. The biggest changes will be to holders of the mid-priced deluxe passport with the highest level experiencing no change at all. Annual pass holders can go online and use drop-down menus to see if they visit Disneyland or DCA on both of their chosen dates. A green date means yes. So green means go, I guess. That's good. Gray means no. And since the annual pass holder program began at Disneyland in June 1983, people have been able to choose from different levels of passes, depending on how much they want to spend and how many days they want to attend the park each year. The lowest level basic pass, geared for Southern California locals, admits its owners only on weekdays and off seasons. The highest level allows visitors every day of the year, even the most crowded ones, which are typically around Christmas. Prices range from $369 to $1,149 per year.
Let's talk about that first.
Let's digest that
because that was a lot. So basically what the story was saying is, when you buy an annual pass now for Disneyland, the Disneyland Resort, you have the option of going to both parks. You can go to California Adventure. You can hop back and forth to Disneyland. You can sort of in your day, as long as you're not blocked out for the day, you can go back and forth between both parks, which is great. Star Wars is coming in 2019. And I think the things that keep up the park managers at night is the thought of thousands upon thousands of annual pass holders and locals descending on the park and making it just a miserable experience for the tourists that are paying full price to stay in the hotels and to pay, buy their food and to, you know, buy their tickets. So this is the solution that they've come up with. What this doesn't talk about is what we talked about with Karen before the show, is this doesn't talk about eliminating the monthly payments, which I think is the biggest problem that they have with overcrowding in the, well, that and FastPass, overcrowding in the park is the fact that they allow that these lower tier passes to pay by the month. And we talked about this. So it's like if you, for so many days of Disneyland, you could, you pay $30 a month per person for a family of four, maybe $180 for essentially Disneyland anytime you want during the week. Now, granted, those are a lot of blockout dates, but what do you guys think about this? Do you guys think this is a good idea? Do you guys think this? Karen, let's start with you.
When you say this, could you specify this? Because I don't like the whole thing. Okay.
What don't, what don't you like about it?
So my first thing was when John said they're estimated about 1 million annual pass holders. And I was like, really? Because it really feels like a lot more. When you go into the park now, it seems like everybody is a freaking pass holder.
It's super crowded, it seems.
It is super crowded all the time. We were in there for a little bit, and I mean, they had overflow open to exit people out of the park.
What is this overflow?
So behind a few couple years ago, they opened up the sort of the backstage cast member areas on both sides of Main Street. So if you're looking down Main Street towards the main entrance, on the left-hand side of Main Street, on the far end by Tomorrowland, and on the right-hand side of Main Street, on the far end, behind the Jolly Holiday is cast member only areas. Well, they sort of half themed them because they were having so much trouble getting people out of the parks that it was turning into a fire hazard. So they themed these backstage areas in the most minimal way possible so that you can literally just use them as cattle gates to open up and let people.
But it's not, I mean, the thing is, if you have never been to Disneyland before and you don't know about this, like yesterday, one guy was walking with like three kids and he was like, where am I going? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a slew of people coming down this way because it's moving and Main Street isn't moving. And he was just like, but where am I going?
I kind of remember that now. Last time that I went, I remember some lady with like what looked like an airplane thing. She was like, right, this way, this way. And I was like, I'm not going down that alleyway with you. I don't know you. You know?
That was because of the parade, though.
That was because of the parade.
And last night, it was because we were leaving the park last night, it was
that crowded.
The fireworks. Well, the fireworks were going off. And so we went through the seating area for Jolly Holiday because we knew because we've been there so many times that entrance was open. But by the same token, if you're trying to fight your way down Main Street and there's 1,000 people all crammed in there, they're not telling you that.
But I mean, side note, that's the thing. They're not telling you. They're just saying this way, and you just kind of follow along. Yeah. So if you were trying to, and I mean, thank goodness the dad wasn't trying to get to a store or some ice cream, and he was just trying to leave. But could you imagine? Like, you get to the bottom, and it's like, oh.
And it's still a back. I mean, you know.
There is a kind of cool thing about being able to go backstage. I didn't think about that. I mean, for someone like me,
Well, that's, on the right side, if you ever go to the park when this is open, and it's in only the most crowded situation. So, like, during the parades and probably during Christmas time, every hour. So the right side by the Jolly Holiday and the candy store is actually boat stores for the Jungle Cruise. So you get to see where they park the Jungle Cruise boats and put them to sleep at night. So it is actually
that's cool.
Really cool.
So you can pet them and tuck them in if you want to.
Of course, when I worked there, that was our break area, and it was always, you know, it's where we used to smoke and like hang out and stuff. So.
But going back to the whole annual pass thing, so I'm really annoyed about this, and I really hate that you could do these monthly payments, because now everybody seems to be buying an annual pass, and everybody's like, oh, but it's so easy. Karen, you should buy an annual pass. You should totally buy an annual pass. And I was like, no, it's too expensive. No, but it's only X amount per month. And I was like, you do realize that X amount per month adds up, right? I mean, this is still a significant chunk of money. you know, they're just lulling you into a sense of okayness.
And I think that there are...
And they're good at that.
They're so good at that.
I think that there's a certain, a much smaller segment of the population that can afford to plunk down, you know, all of the money that is required for, you know, an annual pass. For even for the most basic annual pass, it's still several hundred dollars. And if you have to save up that several hundred dollars, it's a lot different than paying $30 a month. And it's taxing the parking. It's taxing the, just the walkways. It's really creating a situation where there's a lot of locals and people that are coming from out of town are not having the best experience. And again, I think this is what keeps the park managers screaming at night awake, because imagine all of these pass holders, a million plus of them, coming in 2019 and filling the park up at 9 a.m. because of Star Wars.
Okay.
You know, everybody that had those alien bucket popcorn holder things, you can see how many pass holders are there on any given day, because now that they tag themselves.
You know, and maybe those alien bucket things are to let the employees know who the pass holders are. So they're like, don't worry about them. Ignore them. They don't need good service.
That money's coming out of their bank account anyway.
Well, also the other thing is, you know, with that new pass holder restriction, like some of the, and I don't know if this is their way of trying to alleviate some of the pass holders, but like, what is it? The SoCal pass holders now, like basically come once Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opens, you're essentially blocked out the entire month of June.
Yeah.
You know, you're paying for a month that you can't get into.
The SoCal Select, which was the basis of the base passports, they've actually suspended sales on that. But again, I mean, but they've tried everything. They've tried raising the prices. That didn't work. You know,
it's not going to work as long as they have the monthly payment.
Exactly.
Right. You know, and every time Disney raises its prices, it doesn't work that much, but then Knott's sells more passes. And I started to notice every time Disney raises their passes, Knott's gets more busy.
We belong to a Facebook group for Knott's Berry Farm annual pass holders. And, you know, every once in a while, and it's becoming more frequent now, you see people saying, I can't afford a Disney pass anymore, so I'm going to go out and get myself a Knott's Berry Farm pass, which, I mean, good or bad, it's going to drive up attendance and it's going to drive up the crowds at some of the other parks. But is Disney's tried pricing people out? That doesn't, you know, again, that doesn't work. They're trying something, but this thing, the solution that they don't want, and the reason that they don't want it was sort of confirmed by this business journal that I read. It's that this is a steady source of income that they can constantly depend on every month, and they know that money's going to be there, and they're not willing to give that up.
Nor should they.
So, do they do anything special for pass holders when Star Wars opens, or is it just get out of here?
They might do previews. They haven't really released any of that stuff. I know Disney Vacation Club, which I'm a part of, is talking about doing previews for annual pass holders. Florida annual pass holders are getting a special month where they get exclusive access to their new Toy Story Land. So, yeah, they do some nice things for pass holders. They mostly sell them popcorn buckets and
and
magnets.
But don't you guys, get like magnets and pins and some stuff now? Something about a, like, wasn't there some Donald magnet or something?
Yeah, that was in Florida.
Because Knott's really caters to their pass holders when the ride opens. So they do, throughout the summer, they do early entry for pass holders. There's no blackout dates. Instead, you get early entry to avoid the crowds. But what they'll do is sometimes when they have a new ride, it opens up, they'll open up for early entry for pass holders and then surprise you that the ride's open for pass holders only. Or for hang time, they said on this weekend, hang time is open for pass holders only. Show your pass at the gate to get on the ride. They do special things like that for pass holders the time.
Disney doesn't do any of that.
You're telling me if Walt Disney was right in front of your face right now and he was like, you don't feel no love from us, Mr. Passholder, you can't think of anything where you'd be like, yeah, Walt, I'm good? Or
I don't know. Well, first thing I tell them to do is get rid of FastPass, because that's the other thing that's exacerbating the situation. FastPass is just, I know people love it, and I know I'm going to get a lot of hate for this. It is the worst thing on the face of the planet. You're talking about a theme park that was designed with 1950s crowds in mind, and now you're taking the people, and they did do a lot of research. They make you stand in lines that you don't really feel like you're standing in line. But that's a story for another time. But they did a lot of research on lines and theming lines, so like the Indiana Jones queue and some of these, like the Haunted Mansion queue, and just the way that they structured their queues was purposely done to keep you out of these walkways. And now what FastPass does is it takes, not only does it make the wait times longer, but it takes these people who would otherwise normally be waiting in line and dumps them out onto the street. And so that's why the parks feel more crowded nowadays. It's, the parks are busier, yes, but there's also more people just milling about waiting for their next FastPass. We went to the parks a couple of weeks ago and, you know, we did a lot of walking around waiting for our FastPass. And the idea behind it was that people waiting in line aren't spending money. If you are out of line and waiting for your next FastPass, you'll go get something to eat.
And we did that. Shopping. We fell into the trap.
Yeah, we absolutely did.
So I was going to say, and I don't know because I don't have kids, so I can't speak as a parent, but as an auntie who brings, you know, her nieces and nephews to Disneyland, I mean, I understand the issues with FastPass, but I have to say I really like it because too young to be able to stand in like a 2-hour queue.
But it wouldn't be 2 hours if it wasn't for FastPass.
So it's nice to be able to take them out. But, you know, like it's nice to take them out, to have them, you know, grab something to eat, to be able to go to the bathroom, to, you know, like keep them engaged and not busy. And I know it's like, oh, well, it wouldn't be 2 hours if we didn't have FastPass, but it doesn't mean that it wouldn't still be at least like an hour. And an hour is still a really long time for them. I mean, you look at what are called the classic rides, right, over in Fantasyland. Mr. Toad has no fast pass, and that ride is ridiculously long lines. Peter Pan is like, you know, consistently like 2 hours, two hour plus lines.
If you don't get to the park before rope drop, forget about going to Peter Pan.
I mean, you know, my oldest nephew now can do this, but my other, you know, they're too young. They're just like, oh my God, it's so bored. I don't want to do this anymore, you know, and they get really antsy. And then you've got to deal with their boredom and their antsiness. Yeah. And, you know, the whole day is just kind of.
Then they got to go potty, like almost towards the close.
I know.
Yeah. All right. So we got to move on to the second part of our, we're still in our first story. So, John, tell us about what else they're doing. Not this time, not to annual pass holders, but for them.
Are you referring to the...
That's the same story on the same page.
The Best Friends Day?
Best Friends
Day. All right, this is great. So Friday is National Best Friends Day, and to celebrate, Disneyland has a deal for those who have annual passports to the happiest place on Earth. So here we go. More love from Disney.
Woo-hoo! Right?
Okay, starting Monday, Disneyland pass holders can purchase 2 single-day park hopper tickets for up to 40% off of the regular price. The theme park announced this on the website. The least expensive ticket under the deal is the Value Park Hopper, which costs $89. The price is well below the $147 it costs to get into both parks in one day, and is also cheaper than the $97 price for a single day, one park ticket. Under the deal, a park hopper for a peak days, which is what most weekend dates are considered during the busy summer months, is priced at $109. A normal peak day park hopper costs $185, which admission to a single park is $135. Along with this discounted ticket option, Disney announced it will unlock the following select dates in June for certain pass holders. So for SoCal Select, you've got June 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, 18th, 19th, and the 20th. For SoCal, June 15th, 16th, 20th, 21st, and 22nd. So you've got some extra days on the end there. And then Deluxe is June 16th, which neither of the SoCal Select or SoCal options have. So that's just one day just to themselves, those lucky guys. Lucky duckies, let's say. Okay. Under the limited time offer, pass holders can purchase 2 extra discounted tickets on days that their passport is valid for entry to the park. The tickets can only be used on days the user's pass is good for admission, and he or she must also accompany their guests into the park, according to the post. The deal ends September 3rd, coinciding with the last day of Pixar Fest, which is currently underway at the resort. Okay, so why don't we unwrap that
one? Yeah, let's unwrap that one. So it's coinciding with Pixar Fest. So we talked about this last night, too. So this is the opposite end of the spectrum. It's coinciding with Pixar Fest, and they're unblocking. So not only are they unblocking annual pass holder dates, they are also unblocking cast member sign-ins. Cast members can sign people in, but they've been increasing the number of blockout dates over the last couple of years to Disneyland. You know what this tells me? It tells me that Pixar Fest is a bust. Like nobody, it's not the blockbuster attendance draw that they thought it was going to be. So they're saying, hey, look at this. We're pass holders. You can bring in friends and we're going to lift some of the restrictions on your pass.
Well, I'm going to be really honest. I still have yet to figure out what Pixar Fest is. I mean, besides the food stuff and some Pixar-y themed, you know, like signs and stuff like that, I can't figure out what is so special about it.
They shuffled two parades. You know, one parade went across the street and one parade came back across the street. And, you know, it's a lot of decorations. We are going to post a vlog this coming week. Karen and I sampled some of the food offerings for Pixar Fest. But yeah, you're right. It's, again, it's a lot of food. It's a lot of, it's a, you know, two parades that have been running for at least 2 years now. You know,
A lot of signs.
Pixar Play Parade has been running for at least 5 or 6 years, if not longer than that. So, does this make you guys know annual pass holders? Does this make you guys want to go a little bit more? Does this make it a little bit more affordable for anybody here sitting at the table?
Yeah. I mean, I always want to go more.
Karen?
Karen has already said she is in. She is happy to go. And then Karen was just thinking, so if it's 109 and I go on a peak day, would I then get to take the full amount of that peak day ticket, which is close to $200, and use it towards an annual pass? Because if that is allowed, then at that point, I would seriously consider getting an annual pass.
I wonder. That's a good question. You probably not the full value, but I bet you they would give you the value of the...
Because if it's just the $109 value, it's not quite worth it. But a lot of times, if you get like a slightly discounted ticket, they used to allow you to use that full amount, you know, the full value of it towards an annual pass. And so if they were allowing that to happen, then I would seriously be more interested and consider thinking about buying an annual pass.
All right. So that's, yeah. So, you know, some people are in, some people are you know, maybe they'll pick up attendance a little bit. Let's move on.
Do they really need help picking up attendance, though? I mean,
well, their attendance has been, they've been making more money, but their attendance has been declining. It doesn't feel like it, but
yeah, it does not feel like it when you're in the park.
Yeah, we'll talk about our experience in the park a little bit later on. So, okay, thank you guys. We're going to move on to, I can't believe this, story number two. Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights is going trick or treating.
Guidelines all ghosts and goblins should follow. Always stay on sidewalks. Never go to a stranger's house. And never go out alone.
Tonight is about respecting the customs, not breaking them.
Ready.
Okay, beginning September 14th, Universal Studios Hollywood will bring Legendary Pictures cult classic Halloween Trick or Treat to life in all new Halloween Horror Nights mazes that dare guests to live by the rules or suffer the consequences. Based on the critically acclaimed and fan favorite movie directed by Michael Dougherty, the Trick or Treat maze will transport guests to Warren Valley, Ohio on Halloween night to celebrate the holiday's dark traditions. Recreating some of the anthology's most iconic scenes, the disturbing new maze invites brave thrill seekers to become entwined within the secrets of this sleepy suburban town. Guests will experience some of the film's grisliest scenes and encounter hauntingly familiar characters. They will meander. And they will meander through Mr. Keeg's infamous house, watch as college students viciously transform into bloodthirsty werewolves and dismember the town, as well as come face to face with Sam, the spirit of Halloween, who readies to punish those who break the holiday's tradition. For more than 25 years, guests from around the world have visited Halloween Horror Nights in Hollywood and Orlando, multiple movie-quality mazes based on iconic horror television shows, films, and original stories come to life season after season. And the streets of each coast's events are transformed into highly themed scare zones where menacing scare actors lunge from every darkened corner. Additional details from Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights will be revealed soon. Select tickets and vacation packages for Universal Orlando's Halloween Horror Nights are on sale now. For more information about Halloween Horror Nights at either Universal Studios Hollywood or Universal Orlando Resort, visit www.halloweenhorrornights.com.
All right. So do we have any horror fans? It's, first of all, has anybody heard of this movie?
No.
I was just wondering. I felt so bad
reading this, not knowing this movie.
Okay. I thought it was just me. I was like, oh, is it because I'm not a horror fan?
So nothing.
I thought I would just missed the last year or something. Or...
Nothing makes me giggle more, laugh more than when people, when press releases and entities describe something to you that make you feel like I should know what this is. And it's not a thing. Like, a Voodoo Donuts did this a couple of weeks ago with their introduction. Like, they brought in a character that, like, they treat it like you should know who this is, but I have no clue who this is. So, what was that line in there, Brandy, about? It was something about the iconic Mr. So-and-so's
Sam.
Yeah, Mr. Krieg.
Yeah.
Is this a cartoon?
This is a horror film, and it was released by Legendary Pictures, and it was actually produced by Bryan Singer, who's a pretty big,
maybe we should know.
I have heard of Bryan Singer. Yeah,
Bryan Singer. Michael Dougherty is actually he's done a few things.
So you guys have heard of Michael Dougherty?
I have heard of Shannon Dougherty.
Yeah, well, that's what I hadn't heard of him either, and I was like,
yeah,
I'm really out of the loop.
Like,
yeah.
He does a lot of work with Bryan Singer. He directed Superman Returns. He directed the latest Godzilla movie. I mean, I know him because I'm a big film nerd, but. So he's the director of this. Apparently, this was released in 2007, and it made its budget was $12 million. So it wasn't a big budget movie, but this comes on the heels. It's really funny because this comes on the heels of the announcement that Stranger Things is going to be a maze at Halloween Horror Nights, and then they announce Trick or Treat, which is, I'm sure, a fine film made by fine people, but who the hell's heard of Trick or Treat?
Well, now I'm thinking we're not really fans of horror, or else we would know this.
Are you fans of the horror genre?
I was, like, majorly when I was younger.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like riding a skateboard. Once you get a car and a family, you kind of stop riding a skateboard.
Aged out.
Yeah.
You know, I forget the name of what I prefer in the genre. It's not horror. Like, horror is more like...
Slasher?
No, I don't like slasher. It's... Horror is more like shock value.
Right.
Where I prefer more like demons.
It's like supernatural.
Yeah. And there's actually a term for it. And that's what scares me. So horror to me is just so...
Doesn't it all fall under the horror umbrella, though?
It doesn't.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I found that out.
Horror is a very specific... I mean, I can't say exactly what I mean, but it's very specific. There's horror,
can't be specific about it.
It's right. Like, I like scary movies, but I don't like horror. Horror doesn't scare me. It's more just, this is unbelievable. Yeah. I like the believable scary demons and ghosts and aliens.
Fair enough. Karen, are you a fan of horror films?
Karen is not. Karen is not. When I was younger, like in high school, I did a lot of Scary Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just because friends really wanted to go. And so that was kind of like the cool thing because it was new. And so everybody was doing this. I've just aged myself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so I did a lot of that. But if you were to say, oh, let's watch a horror movie, I'd be like, yeah, or maybe something else.
Right.
I have never been to Universal for one of their horror nights. And since I left, you know, high school, I really haven't gone to any at Knott's Berry Farm either. So I'm pretty much completely out of all horror.
Yeah.
Horror free.
I don't.
Well, I think the last thing that counts as horror that I watched was Crimson Peak.
Oh.
The one with Tom Hiddleston, a movie from a few years ago.
I got another for you.
I don't know.
Okay. Sorry. Well, in that case,
I was pretending to know because I thought they would know. No. But then I was like, oh, shoot.
Did I get the name wrong?
I got nothing. So, all right. So, I mean, but again.
What about Paranormal Activity? Did you watch that?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
So again, this comes, Universal Hollywood, just on a side note, has been really slow to release its details. Universal Orlando recently released more mazes. They released how many mazes they're going to have, or they call them houses out there, how many houses they're going to have, how many, it's going to be more houses than they've ever had before. They've confirmed that everything at Universal Orlando is going to be based on an 80s inspired theme. I feel like for whatever reason, the information coming out of Hollywood is much slower and it's not as cohesive, which is weird to me that they're not letting people know this was the most recent story, and this was a few weeks ago, and there's constantly stuff coming out of Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando. So if you've noticed that and you're listening and you are also wondering that, let us know. Send us a note, send us an email, and we'll tell you how to get in touch with that with us a little bit later on in the show. Okay, so thank you guys for that. And then we have one more story, and that's going to go back to John. John, did you know that Pirates of the Caribbean reopened at Disneyland on Friday?
That's what I hear the word on the street is, and this
on
is
Main
exciting.
Street?
Oh, yeah.
Psst, avast there. It be too late to alter course, mateys. And there be plundering pirates lurking in every cove, waiting to board. Sit closer together and keep your ruddy hands inboard. That be the best way to repel boarders.
Well, I heard it on... So, okay, so then I'm going to read the story here. It's about Pirates of the Caribbean, and it reopens at Disneyland. And I'm sure you guys have some input on that. You must have gone on it.
We did.
And we'll talk about that.
All right, so I'm going to do paragraph by... We're going to go through this. Okay.
All right.
About 2 months after the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction closed at Disneyland to overhaul a scene with leering pirates auctioning off women's for brides, the ride reopened Friday with a new scene that the park hopes will generate less controversy. I like how it's like, hopefully less, but some.
It's a little bit.
I didn't know that there was controversy.
It's still pirates.
Yeah. Let's see here. Pirates of the Caribbean at Disneyland Park is back from refurbishment, just in time for summer, as pirates do. The park announced in a blog post Friday.
It's pirate season.
It's yeah.
Arr. Does that mean we hunt pirates or pirates are hunting?
No, it's like you know, your winter home and your summer home.
Yeah, you know. They're back from Florida.
There you go.
Snowbirds. All right, so just in time for summer. The park announced in a blog on Friday, without explaining the reason for the change, with the overhaul auction scene comes a new character, one that will be appearing not only in the ride, but also... Oh, as a meetable face character making its way around New Orleans Square.
She's been very popular.
Has she?
She has been very popular.
I have not heard any. I've been kind of worried about the reaction to this.
Well, the walkable person who can take pictures with you has been quite popular.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Red, is it?
Yes.
Red is the brassy buccaneer who will take center stage as guests pass
through
the town.
By the way, those are Disney's words, not ours.
She'll take pictures and stuff like
female Karen empowerment.
Said. Yeah, throughout the town of Puerto Dorado, and she's also been translated out of her animatronic state and into the form of a live human Disneyland cast member. I had this question earlier, and now I'm thinking: is Puerto Dorado the scene in that film, or is it the whole New Orleans square?
Puerto Dorado is the name of the town in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay. All right.
New Orleans Square is...
Just straight New Orleans Square. Okay. In California. Okay. When Disney officially announced the makeover of the scene last year, they noted that park founder Walt Disney himself always intended for the rides to be updated and refreshed to draw recent return visits.
Which is interesting, because anytime that they do something that people that the public doesn't like, they always trot that out. Well, Walt always said it wasn't a museum, you know.
Yeah.
Walt always said it wasn't. We were like, come on.
Right. It's interesting. It's very interesting, because you've also got, he's a nostalgia person, you can tell as well.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but
Disneyland is built on nostalgia. It's bread and butter is making you feel nostalgic about your childhood.
Yeah. That's what costs $9 a month. Or whatever it was.
No, it's $9 a month for Knott's.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It's $30 for the minimum at Disney.
With all the, which we just went through. Okay. I should remember that because I just said it. All right. The Disneyland version was the last attraction that Walt Disney himself participated in designing. It opened on March 18th, 1967, 3 months after his death. It was originally envisioned as a walk-through wax museum attraction. However, with the success of the boat ride concept of It's a Small World at the 1964 New York World's Fair, Disney decided to employ a similar concept of Pirates of the Caribbean. It is located within the New Orleans Square portion of Disneyland, its facade invoking antebellum era New Orleans, topping by a 31-star United States flag, which would indicate the 1850s. The ornate initials of Walt Disney and Roy Disney, WD and RD, can be seen entwined in the wrought iron railings above the attraction's entrance at Disneyland. There are 630 630,000 gallons of water. It'd be funny if there was only 630. There are 630,000 gallons of water, 53 audio animatronic animals and birds. And I said birds, funny. Okay. And 75 audio animatronic pirates and villagers in the attraction. I was thinking all the birds sing words, you know, like, okay.
And the flowers croon.
Yep. It takes 3 days to empty and refill the bayou. The bayou? Yeah. For renovations. So, wow, 3 days to just drain.
Yeah. Drain and refill it.
I mean, they don't want to overflow the sewer system or anything.
Sure. Yeah.
Which actually happened more often than you would think.
Oh, really?
Back when I was there. Yeah.
There's people like just at their home that live in the neighborhood being like, why is my toilet bubbling up?
There's a basement underneath Pirates of the Caribbean where they used to have a cast employee cafeteria.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Basically a break room for employees. That break room is no longer there because they were having trouble with plumbing and, you know, it is literally under Pirates of the Caribbean. You walk out, you used to be able to walk out of that place, and if you kept walking straight ahead, there was a door that led out into the scene where the skeleton is at the ship's wheel. So, I mean, it was literally under Pirates of the Caribbean.
Wow. Yeah. Pirates of the Caribbean is underground, though, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's in a basement. So the actual...
The ride
goes... subterranean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Which is why when you
big words ride, over there, Karen.
Okay. So the show scene, which dates back to the attraction's opening day, originally showed women tied by ropes and put up for auction, has been replaced by a scene that depicts pirates auctioning off the treasures of the townsfolk. In a 1997 refurbishment, the pooped pirate was recast as the gluttonous pirate, a rogue in search of food. The woman hiding in the barrel was replaced by a cat, and the chase scene was altered to show the pirates making off with various treasures as the formerly chaste women attempted to thwart them and to show those pirates chasing women for their food.
So let's unpack that a little bit. In 1997, they refurbished to the outcries of a lot of people, Pirates of the Caribbean. They took out what is arguably the creepiest character in the original ride. It was a fat pirate sitting on top of a barrel holding a dress, and a half-naked girl would pop out of the barrel.
Sore I be to oist me colors on the likes of that shy little wench. I be willing to share, I be.
And I remember that.
Yeah, and so that was, I mean, that was there for decades. And they're like, well, maybe it's time to let that go. So they changed that. They changed the pirates were no longer chasing women. They were chasing women with food. And, you know, the women were chasing them and trying to run them out of the town. So that was 1997. That was...
So good years. 21
years ago.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So this past summer, there was indeed a controversy. People in the, you know, Me Too era, people were wondering why, and we talk about it on the show, why in a Disney attraction are pirates auctioning off women and selling them into slavery?
Can I just say, it's because they're pirates.
Well, and that was part of the
pirates
argument.
Don't care about Me Too. Yeah. Pirates are all about like
maybe
us.
Not then, but maybe now they do.
No, and even now, I'm gonna hazard a guess. I mean, I am not a pirate, but I will hazard to guess and speak on behalf of all other pirates.
Sure,
that they don't care.
And that was part of the argument. Part of the argument was, well, they're pirates. They're really bad eggs.
You yeah.
Ex Atencio, who wrote the script and a lot of the music for Pirates of the Caribbean after the first rehab in 97, was famous for referring to them as the Boy Scouts of the Caribbean. So regardless of what people think and regardless of the reactions, this has come to a change. They decided it was time to change. This is
too late, Karen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. There's going to be, and this might be a terrible view, but there's going to be kids who are going to go through this ride and they're going to be like, that's okay, because pirates are nice people, because the Pirates of the Caribbean told me so.
So they'll
pirates
see real
are
pirates?
Nice people. So when you see pirates, you know, they're going to be like, oh, they're nice people. And then, uh-oh, shocker, spoiler, wake up. Oh, these pirates are not nice people.
But there's so many people that like are, ever since the Pirates of the Caribbean movie came out, they think pirates are cool. And there's like, I have so many of my friends that have recently had babies and they do their nursery and pirate theme. And it's just like,
I think there was a greater understanding in the 60s of who pirates were. But regardless, here we are, 2018. Somebody has decided, well, maybe we shouldn't be auctioning off women anymore. And they changed the scene. So now the scene, you go through. And my only disappointment is that the original voice of the auctioneer has changed. It used to be Paul Frees, who did Ludwig von Drake, and he did The Haunted Mansion. He's the voice of the ghost host in Haunted Mansion. He's just a really famous Disney actor. If you've heard of Disney stuff, with a deep voice, it was either Thurl Ravenscroft, who did Tony the Tiger, or it was Paul Frees. They changed the voice, and they changed a lot of his dialogue because they had to. The thing nobody ever talks about also in Pirates of the Caribbean is that in addition to the redhead, there was the fat pirate, you know, the fat wench who was really excited about being auctioned off. And essentially the dialogue amounted to fat shaming this poor girl who was just looking for a husband.
Weigh anchor now, you swabbies. What be I offered for this winsome wench? Stout-hearted and corn-edgy.
It'd be a stouter by the pound.
Shift your cargo, dearie. Show 'em your larboard side.
We watch the redhead.
Belay there, you fo'c'sle swab.
Oh, the redhead.
We watch the redhead.
Oh, man. You know, then there was a lot of jokes about, you know, shift your cargo, dearie. Show 'em your larboard side. And, you know, that's where the we wants the redhead. That's where that came in from, because they didn't want the chubby girl. They wanted the redhead.
The busty redhead.
The busty
who was
redhead.
Dressed very finely, might I add.
Right. So who also seemed uncomfortably cool with being auctioned off. So we've now changed this.
Well, we realize pirates are cool.
Right. All right. So we've changed this now. The redhead is now a pirate herself. She's still there.
That's still not historically accurate.
So side note on that, I didn't like the changes because I felt, you know, again, as I said before, they're pirates. But what I did enjoy was that, you know, I kind of like seeing a redheaded pirate, you know, because now I was like, oh, yay, female empowerment. You know, Red was up there. She was leading
Karen and I went to the park yesterday. So we're going to talk a little bit about what we thought of. We actually got to see this and we have video of it. I took a video of the scene and I'm going to put that up on our blog site, thevacationlandpodcast.com. And you can take a look for yourself and let us know what you think about it. Brandy.
So back in the pirate days, was there Irish pirates?
There were female pirates. I don't know how Irish they were, but there were, I mean,
there were a lot of female pirates.
Anne Bonny and, you know.
Somebody was named Bess.
Right, yeah. So there were female, I mean, there were female pirates. It's not historically inaccurate.
And they were kick-ass.
And actually, if you go into the Pirates of the Caribbean, there's two, in the pirate portraits, as you come up in the queue, there's actually portrait of the female pirates. John?
Is the actual animatronic different?
Yes, it's a totally different animatronic.
So does it look newer than everything else?
So if you go on, actually, we have a story about it on our blog site. The picture on our blog is actually what the new redhead looks like. She's dressed exactly like the walk around character, which I think was kind of the idea that they're going to try to introduce this walk around face character in the ride by having someone dressed exactly like her in, you know, real life. So it's totally different. Before it was a girl with a big hat and a low cut shirt and she was kind of doing, you know, poofing up her hair. And so now it's a girl with like, she's got like pantaloons and a gun and a rifle and she's barking out her own orders and,
she's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
She's the boss.
So
she's the boss.
She's the boss.
All kinds of awesome.
And they've actually added a man to the scene. So now it's just an auction. It used to say, the sign in the town used to say, take a wench for a bride. It doesn't say that anymore. It just says auction. So they're auctioning off chickens and they're auctioning off a grandfather.
Eggs. I mean, it's
clock. Yeah. Story wise, I don't know if it fits in. It seems it's very out of the rest of the ride, Pirates of the Caribbean story, the way that goes. But only if you...
Ride-wise, it was really weird for me, though, because I was like, now you have the lady, instead of showing them her larboard side, she's now carrying a chicken and, like, a crate of eggs or something like that. And I was like, this is...
And they try to recreate some of the, like, shift your cargo, dearie, show them your feathers or something like that, you know? So
that would make no sense to somebody who's new on it, right?
It didn't even make sense to me. I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah. I mean, it's not terrible. I don't hate it. Again, my disappointment is that... The only disappointment is that they changed the dialogue. The pirate captain dialogue or the auctioneer dialogue was some of my favorite dialogue in Disney parks. It was just, it was so funny and it was so wonderfully written. The content of it aside, and it was so iconic. It would be like changing the introduction of the Haunted Mansion. You know, it's really jarring.
Is there anything on the Haunted Mansion that'll be considered inappropriate, you think, ever?
Oh, there's the dude hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah, that's,
You know, the you know, there's always my way, and the, you know, lightning and the guys hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah, so. That's true.
But I mean, other than that, this was the only one that was like really actively involved sex slavery.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I don't think if you haven't grown up with it, and in 10 years, nobody's going to notice. Just like, yeah, you know, nobody except the people that grew up with the original chase scene where they're on the, you know, they're on the ride and they're running around in circles. You know, if I grew up with that, you grew up with that. We all grew up with the pirates chasing women because pirates chase women. But nowadays, if you're a little kid, you're not going to notice.
Yeah, nobody, that's true.
In 10 years, nobody's going to care.
It's kind just, of already don't.
Yeah, it's kind of right now. You know,
and then the Jack Sparrow thing,
and the Jack Sparrow
that
thing
still bothers me.
That bothers me too. I just
one time I saw this video though of Johnny Depp actually on the ride.
Yeah, because they were promoting the ride and Johnny Depp.
See, that wouldn't bother me.
That wouldn't bother me either.
Johnny Depp was getting a divorce at that time and he needed the money.
He
was chasing. You're right. I will say this: they did replace, and this is a positive note, in the refurbishment, they got rid of the mist screen that used to project like Barbossa. Davy Jones and Blackbeard, like anything related to the pirate movies. That's gone, and that's good. It's been replaced by the curse, you know, the curse warning, you know, when you used to go through that, called it the transition tunnel.
That's not the Dead Men Tell No Tales, is it?
Which is actually that's a farce. That's part of it. So they repeat Dead Men Tell No Tales, and it
says the talking dead man.
It says the talking dead man, right? He's telling you a tale. And so is the dead skull at the beginning of the beginning of the ride.
Broke his own rule.
So that's that. And, you know, you can go online and.
Sorry. I was trying to talk to John.
So there we go. So, I mean, so that's that. It's been changed. It's here. I guess get used to it. Let us know. I'll put the video up sometime this week on our website, and you can check that out. Let us know what you think. Drop us a line on Facebook or send us an email. All right. Well, thank you guys for our discussion. Brandis is doing like yoga or something over in the corner.
She looks like a pirate.
She is yo-hoing.
I'm trying to get my steps in before it's up so I have all the green bars on my Fitbit.
She kept looking at her watch. I'm like, does she have to go? She's like, no, I'm just getting my steps in. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you very much for that discussion. Thank you for John for reading those two stories.
Yes.
And hey, guys, guess what time it is?
It's time for lunch.
Time for another dining review.
They don't have kids.
Oh. I just.
Sorry, it's a Bubble Guppies quote.
Gotcha. Yeah, no. Got nothing. I got nothing for you. All right. So we our last show, we did a review of the Rainforest Cafe, and that was actually very, very popular. So in addition to going on Pirates of the Caribbean last night, Karen and I went with some friends and my wife to the park where we rode Pirates of the Caribbean. But before that, we went to the Uva Bar, which is in downtown Disney. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that today in our dining review segment. The Uva Bar and Cafe is a downtown Disney restaurant that serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner, featuring an outdoor bar serving craft beer and handcrafted cocktails. Prices for lunch and dinner appetizers range from $14 for chips and guacamole to $17 for an aji tostada. Entrees are mostly in the burger family, but also feature steak and frites. And I'll tell you that anytime you go to a place that calls their French fries frites, you're going to pay more. For $24, fish tacos for $18, and salads ranging from $15 to $18. And Karen, feel free.
Sorry, how much was that salad?
The salads range from $15 to $18.
That's an expensive.
Those fish
lettuce.
Tacos better be the best fish tacos you've ever
$18
had.
$18 for fish tacos. We have Wahoos down the street here.
I was going to say, now I want fish tacos. I also would like some fish tacos.
And you guys feel free to just jump in, and if you have any comments or anything you want to go over. All right, so give you a little bit of background. The Uva Bar restaurant is located about halfway through downtown Disney in the center of the promenade between Catal and what used to be Build-A-Bear and Ride Makers. And Ride Makers used to be Studio 59 or whatever, selling really expensive Christmas villages. But both of those have been closed, and one will be Baseline Tap House, and the other is going to be Black Tap Craft Burgers and Beer. So two restaurants occupying where Build-A-Bear and Ride Makers used to be. And Ride Makers was really popular. Did you guys, John, did you ever, I know you have boys, did you guys ever know about
Samuel
Ride Makers?
Samuel went there for his birthday with the grandparents 1 year, built a little car.
Yeah, so you used to go out and build like little, like you could build your own remote control car, and they had, you know, lug nut.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never went, but I didn't.
I also built animals at Build-A-Bear.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I'm very, very excited for the upcoming F&B outlet options. So.
Yeah, that's going to be. I'm excited about it. I do miss Build-A-Bear. I mean, it was part of what made Downtown Disney fun. I never understood Ride Makers, but apparently it was super popular. All right, so Catal, which is part of the Patina Group, is actually the kitchen that supplies all of the food for the Uva Bar, and its menu is described on their website as Cal Mediterranean. The Patina Group runs a lot of mid to upscale restaurants in high traffic locations around the country, including Lincoln Center, Rockefeller Center in New York, the brand new Edison, Maria and Enzo's in Morimoto Asia at Disney Springs in Florida, and Tortilla Joe's, Naples Ristorante, and Catal at Downtown Disney. They also run the Leatherby's Steakhouse at the Orange County Performing Arts Center.
And also Kendall's Brasserie and numerous outlets all over downtown. The Music Center, all the catering is done by Patina Catering. The Fancy Smancy Patina Restaurant at the Walt Disney Concert Hall. The Cafe Pino over at the library.
So. Yeah, and the chef founder always appears on these, I forget his name, but he always appears on these Gordon Ramsay shows where they have like a chef panel.
I know
judge.
His name, but I'm not going to hazard the pronunciation of it.
Yeah. He's a Michelin starred chef. He's actually really good. So anytime you watch these cooking shows with like, and now our chef guest judge from the Patina Group, and then, you know, so Patina Group is actually very, very
I do enjoy
famous.
His food. And a shameless plug, the annual Asian Pacific Community Fun Gala is coming up on June 21st. And our food will be catered by Patina Group because it is at the Music Center.
And you know what? And at the end, you can give a plug and let us know where we can find more information.
Absolutely.
On how to find that. Okay. So again, Patina Group, they run a lot of these, like, they run a lot of restaurants. They're very good restaurants, but they run them in very high traffic, I hate to say this word, touristy locations. But they're very good at what they do. All right. So let's talk about our meal. So we got seated, and we got seated actually relatively quickly for a Saturday night.
Immediately.
We were still waiting for a friend of ours, and they still sat us, and he actually joined us when we sat down. So this is the bar that's right in the center of Downtown Disney, and they bring the food over from the Catal restaurant, which is right behind it. And we were really lucky to get seated. It's usually pretty busy. Sometimes there's a little bit of a wait. And I started with the cocktail, and I got what was on the menu referred to as the barrel-aged Mai Tai, which featured Priyat XO Reserve Rum, Lahaina Dark Rum, Cake Hyper Orange Curacao, and was supposedly aged in-house in American oak cask. So two types of rum and a curacao. That sounds like a lot of booze, right?
Was no good, huh?
Yeah, it wasn't good. it was $14, and it came with like a lemon, an orange peel on top of a giant block of ice. And it was the most watered-down drink I have had in a very long time.
I will say this. I feel like the drink had the potential to be really good. It also came to the table feeling like Chris had been nursing that drink. And so at one point, it was a delicious-tasting drink and was now just kind of watered down.
Do you know what it sounds like? They didn't change the ice when they poured it in. That's probably a bar error. You shake the drink, and then you pour it over fresh ice. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they just dumped it in.
I mean, I could, and I will say there was alcohol in there, though, because I could feel it a little bit, you know, afterwards. Like, you could feel like, oh, there was some booze in there. But you know, like, overall, it was just, it came tasting really like it
was once
great.
It tasted
like
it had been sitting on the bar for a half hour and just letting ice melt. It was not, for $14, it wasn't good.
But the server was really awesome because when Chris mentioned it.
So I was sitting there kind of complaining about it to my wife and to Karen and to our friend, to anybody who would listen. And so I said, I'm going to tell, I said, it's $14. You know, And then finally I said, okay, well, I'm a big proponent. I said this on our last dining review. You get the service that you ask for. If you're not happy about something, you should at least ask to change it. 9 times out of 10, I found that people will, you know, servers and restaurants, if you're not happy with something, they'll make a good effort to at least make you happy. So I did. I told the server, he came back. I said, listen, I asked him, is this a premix? Because if it's a premix, then that will have a lot to do with it. And I probably would have been a little more okay with it. But he said, no, that they make it fresh. They make it in-house. They make it at the bar. And it's, you know, aged in oak barrels and all this stuff. I said, it's not good. So he actually offered. I didn't even ask. He said, let me take it away from you. Let me take it off your bill and let me get you something else. So he did. And what I ended up...
Should have pounded it before he took it away.
He actually did not take it away immediately.
He left it on the table
in case, I think, we wanted to pound it before he took it off.
A couple more sips and I was like, this just isn't good. And I've had really good Mai Tais. There's a great Hawaiian restaurant that does a great brunch down in San Diego known as Bali High. They are like the home of the killer Mai Tai. And I've had good Mai Tais before. This was not one of those.
You know, we could stop there on our road trip down to SeaWorld.
We absolutely will. Not should, we're going to.
Yay!
So what I did end up with was I got the 21st Amendment Brewery Hell or High Watermelon, which was a wheat beer. It was a watermelon-infused wheat beer for $11.50, and that was actually very, very good. It's one of their seasonal drinks. So aside from the fact that the server did offer to take the drink away, I found the service pretty average. Karen, what did you think about the service?
It was pretty average. I would say he was very polite and he was very efficient. There was no extras like, hey, how are you guys doing? How are you enjoying the food? Can I get you anything else? Do you need this?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. There were no extras. It was very like, hi.
But in all fairness, the place was, I wouldn't say fully packed because we were able to sit immediately, but it was extremely full. And so it was a very constant turnover. So, you know, the tables around us, you know, had changed like 2 or 3 times by the time we left.
So it was busy, but he gave off that vibe that, hey, I'm busy.
Yeah, a little bit. And I found, and you and Karen is the one that had this happened to, I found that, I mean, I like to always ask my server, hey, what's good? Like if I'm having trouble between, you know, choosing between things. I usually like to ask the servers, hey, I'm having trouble. If you had to choose between this and this, what would you choose? And I found most servers are happy to give recommendation. This guy seemed a little bit annoyed that we were taking our time.
He did not like Karen asking. He didn't show that he was unhappy with me asking, but he basically rattled off half the menu.
Well, that's John. Go ahead, John. He's dying to say something.
John,
okay, so all my life.
Who's the host here?
This is funny because literally just yesterday I was talking about this because.
Not figuratively?
No. Okay, I need to stop saying that. Karen keeps getting me. All right, so figuratively. No, I always ask, like, hey, what do you suggest? Like, what's the.
I love
you know, you're this is your
Which
place.
Is exactly what I did yesterday.
It's okay. Well, I saw this video, and 9 times out of 10, that's the thing that waiters hate the most.
Really?
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
No, I mean.
They allegedly.
When I've been a server, and I know people that have been servers, and that's why you taste the entire. When you train as a server, you eat the entire menu, basically, so that you can.
In one sitting?
Yeah.
You're not getting a full serving.
Yeah,
size,
yeah. You get a taste of the things that are offered so that you can make recommendations. And I feel like good servers, the ones that I really appreciate, and I'll give them the extra gratuity for this, you know, are the ones that say, I really like this. And when I asked Elo, he did have that kind of annoyed vibe. We'll get into what we ordered. Their specialty is burgers. So they really like a burger restaurant place. And they have a lamb burger, which is one of their specialties, and they had this kind of seasonal Greek burger. I said, which one do you prefer? Which one should I get? And he said, without hesitation, he said, get the lamb burger. So, I mean, and it was great. The lamb burger was great. But that's really weird that you saw that video that servers hate that.
I think it came down to, sorry, Karen.
Well, no, finish.
What it came down to is, because then they have to have a conversation with you, and that takes more time.
So I think, okay, so for John's first, I think that also varies what type of restaurant you're working at.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if you're in a high volume restaurant, you know, as much as you want to have a conversation with somebody, you can't really carry it on. and be able to get away quick enough to continue on the rest of your duties and to turn tables over quickly. In this case, though, I wouldn't say that that was necessarily the problem. So I typically won't say, what do you recommend on this menu, unless it's huge and I can't get through it, or, you know, like you're coming back really fast. Typically, I kind of see a few things that I like and I go, okay, well, you know, I'm looking at this or this. What are you suggesting? The reason I asked him yesterday, what do you suggest, you know, like, what do you recommend off this menu, is because we had just gotten seated and then we had gotten the menu, and then he came over and he was like, what can I get you guys? I hadn't time to look at this menu. So I was like, oh.
Yeah, that was the second time he'd asked that after he took our, because he came over, took our drink orders and said, are you guys ready? And then I said, well, I'll take my drink. And then he came back like it wasn't even a minute or two later.
So I was like flustered, because I'm like, okay, well, there's flatbread, there's ahi stack, there's burgers, there's sandwiches, there's salads. You know, I was like, what, you know, like there's a lot of stuff on this menu. And I, you know, like I don't have time to figure it out. And I did not know that it was more of a burger and fries kind of place.
I don't know about you guys, but like when I go to a restaurant, and it was a nice night, you know, it was warm, it got cold really quickly, but we were outside, you know, for friends we hadn't seen in a while, except for Karen, I see Karen a lot. But our other friend who invited us out, you know, we hadn't seen him in a while. So, you know, you sit down, you converse a little bit, you look at your menu. Maybe that's our fault. Maybe we should just shut up and, you know, get to the menu. But I feel like when I go out to a dining experience like that, I want to sit down. I may have a quick chat, catch up, look at the menu while we're doing all of this, you know. So,
you know, but then he was just like, oh, well, this is good, and this is good, and this is good, and this is good, and this is good. And I was just like,
he really did rattle off half the menu.
Maybe he was hungry.
Maybe. Huh. And I was just like, you know, I'm well, that's like half the menu. I'm sorry, but that wasn't so helpful.
And I'll get to this at the end. So by the end, we couldn't track him down to get our bill. We wanted to get into the park because the fireworks were starting. It was getting close to 9 o'clock, and we wanted to get into the park before Fantasmic and the fireworks started. And we're like, hey, so like now he's taking his time, and we had to like track him down to get our bill. But it was fine. It wasn't bad
Poor
service.
Guy, man. He has no idea that there's a podcast going on about his service right now.
Well, we didn't mention his. We did not mention his name. But yeah, then maybe he should.
Go send a link of your podcast to the restaurant's Facebook page.
I think he actually figured out by the end what we were doing, because I was taking notes and taking pictures. And I have a suspicion that he figured out what I was doing, because after he saw me doing that for a while, he kind of...
He's like, oh, crap, this isn't Instagram.
Yeah, he's like,
people will stop by and be like, hey, did you guys want, you know, a dessert?
Yeah, I had to like flag him down to get the dessert, which I heard that restaurants hate when you do that. Like the restaurants hate dessert because you occupy table space and it's a low profit item on the menu. So, okay, let's talk about the menu. Let's talk about what we got. So, there we go. All right. So, there were four of us. Two of us got the lamb burger, which is a house ground lamb, piccolo pepper, feta, arugula, lemon dill, aioli, pickled red onions, and it comes with garlic fries. John, let's play a game that we started last week. How much do you think that burger cost?
The burger or like everything altogether?
So with the burger and the fries, so just for that one item.
I want to point out though that you had your option of sweet potato fries or garlic fries.
It doesn't affect the price.
Oh. But this may affect the way you consider how much you think you're paying.
So,
okay, well, now knowing what the salad was, what, $18?
Between $15 to $18.
So I'm going to guess it was $27.
Brandis. One lamb burger with fries.
Okay, so since it was lamb, I'm going to guess $34.
$19.
Oh.
Yeah, which is
you
still
guys
like
tricked us in a way.
Karen, in my opinion, it's still a lot for a burger,
yes,
but
it is a lot for a burger
and fries. But I will
but
say
it was a lamb burger.
It was a lamb burger
with garlic fries.
Babies cost more money.
I got wow. Send that to Brandis at. But dear PETA. Anyway.
This burger was really delicious.
So the burger was really good. I ordered mine medium well, and it was cooked really well. All of the toppings on there, it wasn't too much, it wasn't too little. They used to give you more fries. I feel like they used to give you way more fries, and now they just kind of like plop them down in the basket. But
I feel like that has to do with food waste, though, you know?
Yeah. It's like, well, everywhere used to have more fries. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Used to have more fries.
Except for Red Robin. You get those unlimited fries at Red Robin. Mm. But this is not Red Robin. Okay. So Karen got the grease. It was good. The lamb was juicy. Sorry, go back for a second. The lamb was juicy. The burger was juicy. The bun was toasted. The fries were really well cooked and garlicky. Mm. It was a really good burger. $19 burger. I don't know. It wasn't a huge burger, but I was happy. I didn't feel like the price point exceeded what my expectations were for this burger.
You must not have had your second drink by then, because that's when burgers get really good.
I had my watermelon beer by then, so it was good.
Oh, okay.
It was really, really good. So, and our friend also enjoyed his lamb burger. Karen got the Greek burger, which is a signature beef blend, marinated feta, grilled romaine and roasted pepper slaw, sliced avocado, and a spiced aioli on a brioche bun with garlic fries. How much was this burger?
Well done, Karen. Well
Thank
done.
Thank you.
I feel like because there's avocado, there's going to be more. So I'm not going to go 27 again, but I'll go with 19.
Right. Brandis?
Actually, since it's not lamb, I'm going 15.
John wins the both showcase showdowns. Ding, 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 ding. And it was, now you got the exact amount. So it was $19
To be
well.
Fair, it wasn't yours.
Mine was $19 as well.
Yeah, that's so kind of cheated.
Kind of a trick question. Karen, tell us, what did you think about this? Where you got it without the olive?
I got it without the olive vinaigrette, because I will be honest, I was confused by an olive vinaigrette. And so I was trying to figure out if it was olive tapenade or if it was some sort of weird vinaigrette that they were dousing this in. So I just decided to go without it, especially because our server couldn't quite tell me.
He seemed very confused by the question.
He didn't know either, huh?
So I just said, please, please do not have any olive vinaigrette. And he was like, okay. But the burger was really good. I thought it was a very solid burger. I don't know that I would say it was super good. I would say it was a very solid burger. The flavors worked really well. My problem was, while it was a toasted bun, the bun was a little bit dry. So at the end of it, like when I popped in the meat and there were like two bites left, they were bun, you know, and as an Asian person, my parents forever told me, eat everything on your plate or in your bowl because, you know, there are poor people somewhere who are starving.
True.
So, of course, I popped those last two bites in, but the bun was very dry. So I was like, oh, you know, and I don't know if it was something that would have been rectified had I kept the olive vinaigrette. But other than that, it was very solid, but it was a thing that wasn't on the menu. It was on the little like pop-up menu for seasonal specials on the table, which again, I didn't really have time to look at when we were ordering because I was still trying to scan through this menu with all sorts of stuff.
Ken, I think if I had to pick a theme for the service, the first half was very, very rushed. The second half was borderline non-existent. I mean, so they had bussers and runners come and clear our tables and offer to get us anything. But again, at the end of the meal, it was.
And I do want to point out, the bussers and the runners were fantastic.
Yeah, they were,
every
they
time
were
they dropped by anything they or they stopped by or refilled our water, they wanted to know if there was anything we needed, how everything was, could they get us anything, you know.
Did the manager at all swing by and say hey?
Did not.
No, did not.
Do you guys like that or no?
That always makes me feel super awkward.
Me too. I feel like I'm going to get the server in trouble.
Yeah. Unless I'm like not happy with stuff, then I'm like, let me tell you about what's going on. But I'm
okay with this. Yeah. I like making friends with managers.
She does. Yeah. Karen's really good at that. So
that's good.
Anything else on your dish, Karen?
No, I mean, it was solid.
Fries, yeah.
So the fries were good and they were nice and crispy and they were like, you know, European style. So kind of the skinnier ones,
yeah.
A good garlic taste to them. Mm. I believe that there was less fries, but even still for me personally, that entire burger and fries was more than enough. Like I was stuffed.
It was
afterwards.
Good for me too. Yeah, it was good for me too. Like I'm not a light eater by any means. And I was
so
full by the
yeah, time. I kind of like I shouldn't have eaten all of the fries because I was really full, but I just kind of kept shoveling them in. So I was glad that there wasn't more fries because then I would have been concerned about like food waste.
Yeah.
You know.
For sure.
So, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good. So then again, I flagged down our server. My wife saw something on dessert. So something that she liked for dessert. So we got the bourbon old-fashioned vanilla wafer pudding. Mm. And this is served in sort of a clotted cream glass jar. The description is vanilla wafer. Sorry, I forgot one thing. We also got the Manchego salad. which comes with wild arugula, manchego cheese, shallot, apple, date, candied walnut, toasted walnut, vinaigrette. This was $15, but we also added chicken to it, which was an extra charge to it.
So I cannot attest to how this tasted, but what I will say is when it came, my personal thing was that it wasn't the prettiest, most Instagrammable salad, because it came as a pile of apparently wild arugula, which I didn't realize. I was just like, okay, there's Rocket. I didn't realize it was wild. So I'm intrigued to find out how, you know, they came about this wild arugula. But it was like a big green pile, like a little mountain of Rocket. With a bunch of brown stuff on top of it and white chicken laid out off to the side. So I was kind of confused because I was like, where's the cheese?
And it was like shaved manchego. It was like shaved thin.
But even still, slices. I was like, where yeah. is the cheese?
I mean, it looked good. I didn't taste any of it.
But once, you know, once she dug into the salad, I was like, oh, you know, I'm starting to see everything come up. And they did have a lot of the candied pecans. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't see any apples, but I guess, you know, that's a good thing. So, I mean, it looked tasty.
Too sweet.
And she said it was a little sweet because it had the apples and it had the candied pecans. But she said it was good. It was
she enjoyed it.
Balanced out. So, okay. So for dessert, we got the bourbon old fashioned vanilla wafer pudding. It was vanilla pudding and vanilla wafers. Descriptions: vanilla wafers soaked in bourbon flavored vanilla pudding, whipped cream, maraschino cherry, orange zest, and this was $9. It came in a glass jar, and it had a good flavor to it. It wasn't, you know, I couldn't pick a lot of the bourbon out, Karen. You said you could taste the bourbon.
I could taste a little bit of bourbon at the end of it, but still, you had to wonder, you know, why they didn't give you a little bit more bourbon. But more importantly for me, vanilla wafers all mushed in there kind of, in a good way, reminded me of Sara Lee pound cake.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I will say this for, it was, I mean, my fingers, I'm showing them, my fingers are about 3 inches apart, as, you know, as big as they can go. It was about that big. It was 90% whipped cream.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing.
For $9, I want more pudding.
More substance.
Yeah. So we cut it in, like literally cut it in down the middle inside the jar and started eating it from the middle out. And it was like the left half and the right half. And you could see the whipped cream just went all the way straight down into the bottom of the jar. So it was good.
I'm not sure it was $9.
Yeah, it was $9. Exactly. I don't think it was $9 good.
Like a solid $4.50 good.
Yeah. It was an interesting choice. I don't know if I'd get it again, but okay. So we are going to play a game. Ooh. And we started this last week. So John, yes. Knowing everything that you know about our meal, how much was the final bill?
Like for all of you?
For all of, for four people, no discount. That's copyrighted.
You do it different, like do.
Okay. I'm not musical enough all to right. change it up.
I'm going to guess $87.94.
Okay, Brandis, how much was it for
including
four
tip?
With no tip, just the bill itself.
Okay, wait. There was four of you.
Four of us. Four meals, one alcoholic beverage.
I'm doing the math now. Now I know I'm wrong.
$109.
Technically, John wins because he got closest. John, come on down because you got closest without going over. Although Brandy was closer. So it was $103.98 for four people. And we did get an annual pass holder discount on that. So
it's Price is Right rules.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely. It's always. Is. Did you not listen to last week's episode?
Then I would have gone like $1 over.
Because he wasn't on it.
Right.
I'm not done with it.
That's fine. So Price is Right rules whenever we play this game. So again, $103 for four people. It's a little pricey. We left full. We left happy. You know, we got an annual pass holder discount on it. It was fine, I think is the best description. It was pretty much what we expected. You know, it was... delicious.
I will bump it up because of the, you know, because of the company I was in. Yeah. It was good. It was a little above fine. It was a solid, fun evening.
So, Karen, a scale of 1 to 10, what would you, let's make it easier. Let's see, out of 5, 1 being lowest, 5 being highest, what would you give Uva Barn Restaurant?
Can I go with half points?
Yes, you can.
I would give it a solid 3.5. I also am a bit of a harsh grader, though. So, you know, keep in mind, I am a very harsh grader, especially when it comes to F&B. So I give it a very solid 3.5. But based on the crowds that we ran into later, it has bumped up to a 4 in my memory now.
And you know what? And I'm going to go right there with you. I think out of score, possible score of 1 through 5, I'm going to give it it was a 4. It was
four stars.
Four stars. Four stars. So it was not the best I've ever had, but it was, you know, it was really good. The food was really good. The, I guess, ancillary service was good. And the server did switch out my drink that I wasn't happy with. And we got an annual pass discount. So what else can you?
I think for me also, though, because we keep walking by Napoli and the new redo of it looks so pretty that I really want to try Napoli.
We'll make that one our next one. So, thank you very much. Thank you guys for participating in our dining review. We're going to go ahead and split this off like we did the last episode with, if you just want to listen to the dining review portion of it, we're going to go ahead and split that off and do a separate half episode. So I would like to thank you guys all for joining us today. Thank you, John. Thank you, Brandis. And thank you, Karen, for joining us again. Karen, would you like to give a shout out or a short, quick plug to your charity that you work with?
Yes. So our nonprofit is the Asian Pacific Community Fund. That's APCF. Again, you do not have to be Asian to do it, to donate to us. So we do have an annual gala coming up on Thursday, the 21st of this month. You can find more information on our nonprofit and about the gala coming up at apcf.org. That's Asian, P as in Pacific, C as in Community, and F as in Fund.org.
And we'll post a link to the APCF on our Facebook page and all of our Twitter accounts. So you can connect with Vacationland online by visiting our website, thevacationlandpodcast.com, Facebook page, facebook.com/vacationlandpodcast, our Instagram, VL Podcast, our Twitter, @vacationlandshow, and you can always email us, vacationlandpodcast@gmail.com. You can also make sure to visit our YouTube channel, Vacation Land Podcast, and we're going to be putting up some new videos. Right now we have a tribute to the ESPN Zone. We're going to have a tribute to the Rainforest Cafe, as well as Karen and I's review of Splitsville and our review of some of the Pixar Fest food. Again, I'd like to thank all of our hosts for joining us. I'd like to thank you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We hope you've enjoyed the rest of your stay in Vacation Land. We'll see you next time.